This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not an offer or solicitation of an offer to buy or sell securities. SNN Network, SNN Inc., and the Planet Microcap Podcast and the representatives are not licensed brokers, broker-dealers, market makers, investment bankers, investment advisors, analysts, or underwriters. We do not recommend any companies discussed. We may buy and sell securities in any company mentioned and may profit in the event those securities rise in value. We recommend you consult with a professional investment advisor, broker, or legal counsel before purchasing or selling any securities referenced in this podcast. Welcome to the Planet Microcap Podcast. I'm your host, Robert Kraft. Thank you all so much for the support and for tuning in. Do me a quick favor. If you like what you hear at Planet Microcap, please take 2 seconds and give us 5 stars on Spotify or Apple. This helps with the search engines so that more folks can also discover and engage with all things microcap stocks. The Planet Microcap Showcase Vegas happening April 30 through May 2nd, 2024 at the Paris Hotel and Casino is right around the corner. I mean, we're 6 weeks away. Our event brings together the best investors and thought leaders in microcap, quality microcap investing opportunities, and above all else, the most fun and highest return on your time that you could ask for. If you'd like to register to participate, it is complimentary for all investors. Please visit planetmicrocapshowcase.com. See you in Vegas. Now, my guest on the show today is my friend and frequent guest, Fadi Diab, better known as at the Gladiator HC on Twitter X. It's been well over a year since he's been on the show, and we had a bunch of topics that I wanted to get his take on, in particular, how the Australian microcap market has fared for the Gladiator in 2023 and their performance relative to North American microcaps. Fadi is the eternal speculator, and while some of you may run away when you hear mining, cannabis, or better yet, psychedelics, he's running as fast as he can towards it, looking for hidden gems. We chat about all of this and more. Thank you again for tuning in to the Planet Microcap Podcast, and please enjoy my interview with Fadi Diab. Fadi, great to see you, man. How you doing?
Bobby, it's been way too long.
How are you? I'm very all good. All well. I'm just so happy to welcome you back on here today, all the way from Dubai. You know, I mean, you were in Australia. Now you're all Dubai'd out, dude. Look at you.
Well, I'm still an Aussie, just living in Dubai. But I moved here July of last year with my family, so we're loving it.
That's awesome, man. Did you adjust to the temperature? Because what, July in Dubai? What is that, like 120? Wait, you go Celsius.
I don't know Fahrenheit, but I'd never been to Dubai before I moved here. So the first time I was here was the first day that I moved. So I was just like, we took a chance and we went. But July is summer. So summer in Dubai from say July to the end of September is 40 to 50 every minute of the day. Midnight, midday, doesn't matter. It's 40 to 50 every single day. So it took me a good couple of months to kind of get used to that. Now it's beautiful. Now it's mid-20s to late 20s Celsius. But we'll enjoy the weather between now and May, June, it starts to heat up again.
Absolutely, dude. If that was me, I'm a sweater. I would literally, like, as soon as I hop off the plane, I'll just be freaking drenched.
I only wore black t-shirts for 4 months because you can't see the sweat.
That's a good idea. Cool, man. Well, listen, I love having you back on here because we can literally jam on 1,000 different topics. I thought, first off, you know, your focus is Australian microcaps. So I figured maybe we'd start there on, you know, kind of a state of the markets, what's been going on. Last time I had you on was like, I think December 2022. It was around the 22 timeframe. So it's been basically a full year and change. So Australian microcaps, has it been as bad there as it has been here in North America? You know, give us the scoop.
It hasn't improved at all since we last spoke, which has been disappointing. So the market really turned here in, say, Jan 2022. And since then, you know, we've had pockets of hope that have come through, you know, a good week or a good month, a good sector. But overall, the markets have really been struggling since that COVID run ended and interest rates started to go up, inflation went up, then we've been very quiet here. So not as bad as Canada, from what I hear, as in liquidity is still okay-ish here. I did own one stock on the Canadian exchange and it went 3 weeks without even trading one share. So that'll be the last time I'll buy a zinc explorer on the Canadian stock exchange. But it definitely hasn't been great. And to be honest, it was a little bit expected considering we had such an amazing run, from say March 2020 You know, after everyone freaked out about COVID, they started printing money. Then everything started to do really well here for about 12 to 18 months. And in a period like that, you can't get away with, oh, let's just go back to normal. You know, everyone's got to go through pain. The people who made the easy money, who didn't really know what they were doing, they've got to give it all back. It's just the market cycle.
What would you say were some, I mean, obviously some, it seems like there's just a similar key drivers that's resulted in the current market that you're experiencing it for Australian microcaps. But is there anything in particular that's more Australian that, or that's happened in Australia or to Australian businesses, any kind of macro forces within the country, the continent, that also explains why small business microcaps have been affected? Or is it more of just like, it's kind of beating off the global sentiment in small microcap?
Yes. Australia's on the other side of the world. We have a population of what, 27 million, probably less than the state you live in. We don't have macro issues. Whatever the US does, Australia does, or, you know, North America. So we pretty much follow the US. Whenever, you know, I see some tweets from some Canadian investors that I follow that their markets has done pretty well for a few days, you know, our markets did too. So they move pretty much in quite fluidly together. I think it's more about, it's just a risk off environment, and it has been for a while. So with, you know, I think it's two things. One, it's a risk off environment because inflation got so high, the interest rates got so high. So it just doesn't make sense for someone to take so much risk when they can put it into a term deposit or some kind of high interest yield account, get 6, 7, 8% interest. You know, why would they bother with, yeah, that hasn't been around since the 1980s. I've never been in an environment where you can get that interest rate. So I think people were just like sucking money out and putting it in, you know, safer assets. And I think the other thing is the indices have just done incredibly well. And what I find is when the US indices do really well, the microcaps struggle. Because everyone's making money when the indices are doing well. So the money doesn't flow down. So it's actually, whenever the indices are going sideways, I find microcaps are doing the best. Because there's not enough money to be made. People take more risk and come down the scale. And eventually, because as you know, microcaps are quite illiquid, that just needs a little bit of extra volume to kind of move a whole a company or a sector.
100%. So, I mean, where have you been parking your money, or where have you been finding opportunities? Because, I mean, one of the reasons I also enjoy having you on is that you do, you know, you're a stock picker by trade. You know, you're always looking for, you know, interesting ideas in Australian microcaps. So how have you been playing this downturn?
Yeah. So if there was one word to kind of summarize who I am, you know, I'm a speculator. So I don't look for value stocks. I don't look for, you know, companies that have potentially just haven't done well during a downturn, but have, you know, a very large history of success and me trying to pick a point to, you know, enter that stock. For me, the uglier the chart, the better. You know, the more hated, the better, which means I'm not competing with too many people. Because a lot of people look at that and think, oh, that this must be a terrible stock. I won't even bother looking into it. So for me, my strategy doesn't really change regardless of the market. Good market, bad market, doesn't matter. I stick to my lane. I'm generally about 70% in junior mining explorers and 30% in either biotech or normal tech. So that can then go to another level because, you know, when you talk about junior mining, what are the sectors? Gold, uranium, copper, rare earths, whatever it may be. So I allocate more money to specific sectors depending on what's doing well or what I think has a good fundamental case for investment. But I generally stick to that 70-30 model when it comes to my own strategy because it's hard enough being good at one thing, let alone, you know, more than one.
Absolutely. So let's jam on junior mining a little bit, you know, because I mean, hey, listen, that's your primary focus. 70% of your portfolio is in junior mining. You know, and we were talking offline about this. And I wanted to get your opinion because, you know, look, I've participated on a panel like this where we've, you know, had a number of investors and folks in the space talk about, you know, how do we reach out to the, you know, new retail audience, or how do we market junior mining as a sector to the generalist investor? And quite frankly, I just don't really see a clear path for that. I just don't anymore. You know, not that I think that it's like, it's so hated and then it will come back and like, it's just bad sentiment. I just generally don't think just in all my conversations with generalist investors and folks that just are like, oh, Jim, I don't know, you know, that aren't really gold bugs. They just rather not, you know, it's outside of the realm of their realm of expertise. The chances of winning are just not great. You know, let the people who are experts in that, they do that, but they'll maybe take a look at something that is more similar to like a value play, or that's a real company or in production using the junior mining, you know, parlance. Yep. So what do you think about this? You know, I mean, how have you, you know, I mean, listen, you talk to a lot of retail, you have a very nice following on Twitter, you know, so yep. You're also talking to people that aren't just gold bugs, but people that are generalists, and you're talking your interest in junior mining. So what are your thoughts on this?
To be honest, I think you've just perfectly explained why microcaps have been struggling. Right, that's why, because people just, there hasn't been a big winner. There hasn't been a lot of money being made in microcaps. So what happens is the money gets sucked out. But just like uranium, you know, 3 months ago was the worst sector, and it was for a decade. And you wouldn't have met a uranium junior mining explorer, investor, or speculator. They didn't exist. It was just the hardcore uranium bugs, or if you want to talk about gold, the hardcore gold bugs. But when sentiment shifts, people quickly forget about, you know, their opinion on a specific sector. Because when they see uranium doing well, or they see gold doing well, gold going to all-time highs on the spot price yesterday, and they start to see people make money, that attitude changes very, very quickly. So to me, I don't think about it in terms of how do you get more eyes on junior resource stocks, because even within that sector, there are many sectors that have done very well in the last 18 months. Like, I'll give you an example, and I won't mention any stocks that I own, but I won't give you the name, but there's a rare earth exploration, okay? One of the hottest sectors in the last 18 months. The best performer on the ASX was, I don't own this stock by the way, was MEI. It went from kind of 1 cent to 29 cents in that time.
Woo.
Okay. The stock that I'm talking about that I owned, I won't mention the name, it was the fourth best performing stock on the ASX in 2023. Okay. Mm-hmm. Again, right next door to MEI, rare earth exploration, a specific kind of rare earth. So if you're not so set on, I only want to invest in gold, or I only want to invest in uranium, or I only want to invest in copper, whatever it is, if you have a good enough structure where you're covering four or five of the sectors within junior exploration that have the highest chance of performing, then you don't need all your stocks to do well. I pretty much had one, maybe two very big runners in the last 18 months, since January of 2022, right? But those two runners more than made up for the other stocks that didn't do well. So I've got some, my gold stocks have been sitting there doing very little, right? The gold price hitting pretty much all-time highs in US dollar terms yesterday, but still they're not doing much at all, because it's not about a specific unit of measurement. It's not about the spot price did this, so stocks must do this. It's not about that. It's about sentiment. And so when people finally believe that, okay, we can make money in gold, to your example about gold, then all these gold stocks that are very illiquid and are trading at, you know, $5, $6, $7 million valuations, well, like I remember back in 2017, the gold price was $1,400. Today it's 2,100, right? So it's nowhere near where it was today. But you couldn't find a gold stock on the ASX, Junior Mining Explorer, with even rock chip samples, like they had nothing, for less than $10 million. Today you could find a gold stock with a, you know, 500,000 ounce JORC resource for $5 or $6 million. So they won't stay at those levels when sentiment changes, but that's the key. If you say I'm a gold bug, you would have had a terrible last 2 or 3 years. Right. But if you can say, I'm going to allocate X amount and don't take 70%, because I've been doing this for a long time. You should, like, if you haven't been doing it as long as I have, you shouldn't put 70% into a particular sector.
This is not investment advice.
No. But I'm like, whatever the percent is, right? Pick a percent. I want to allocate X percent of my portfolio to junior mining stocks. Then go do your research on all the elements or the minerals or metals that you think will do well over the next, you know, 5 years that actually have a large scale thematic. So for example, lithium. Right? Or copper. I love copper. Copper's done nothing for the last 2 years. But without copper, there is no green energy revolution. It just won't happen. You need copper in order for the green revolution to happen. Mm-hmm. So, but if I just said, oh, because of that, I'm just going to own copper, I would have made absolutely no money. But copper shares that theme. Nickel shares that theme. Lithium shares that theme. Gold shares that theme. There's a number of them do. So if you just kind of spread your money across specific sectors within junior mining, then there kind of is always one junior mining, either metal or mineral, that is doing well.
You know, let me, this is going to be kind of random, but like this actually hits on something I talked about with Brian Bears in a podcast that we just did. And it was, we talked about how even though the universe of microcaps, like just in general, might be shrinking, it's becoming more efficient. And I feel like it's kind of starting to, I feel like it's actually happening a bit more in junior mining. Where, I mean, look, it's not to say that there's a ton of companies not like just completely going away.
Yeah.
But the universe of investable ideas, I feel, is actually shrinking and in turn making it more efficient. I'm saying this anecdotally. I'm not trying to say like I have
actual I actually don't think that's true. I probably disagree with that.
Oh, good. If you think about
like tech has been dead for a long time, okay, yeah. In the ASX. All of a sudden, NVIDIA just goes from no one knows who they are to the number one, you know, NVIDIA's market cap is bigger than the Chinese stock market in the space of a few months, right? So then all of a sudden, AI tech stocks on the ASX start to do very well. So whether it's junior mining, that's why you can't put 100% in any particular sector, because let's say junior mining slows down, there's always going to be ideas coming from the US that will drive innovation here.
Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. I guess the efficiency statement that I made really came down to something you said earlier having to do with what is that main thing that will change this sentiment? Like
nobody knows.
No one will know. And I know we're trying to crystal ball, but like you could kind of see with other things in the market that like, all right, okay, AI. AI has been talked about for 60 years. You know, yeah, it's never materialized into something that's commercial. Now it kind of has. There are commercial entities. You know, even crypto to an extent. All right, it's now been known for 10, 15 years. There's, you know, I'll save my thoughts on crypto for another time.
stick to your lane.
Even though I do own a little bit of Bitcoin. But the thing about some of these commodities is that the narrative on a few of them has been there for many years, and yet it's just still not there, because everyone knows, especially with like uranium, we all know it's extremely expensive to actually produce the usable powder, right? Lithium, extracting it, very expensive to actually extract and then use it for various purposes. Copper obviously is a different story. That I probably would agree with you in many respects. Not a shareholder in any spot copper prices or copper companies, just for full disclosure. But in some of these other materials, you know, that narrative's been around for years, and yet there hasn't been any kind of progress in terms of how to extract it in a more cost-effective manner than so that it can be used commercially in a more efficient way. So like that's why I get stuck on sentiment when it comes to some of these commodities.
The cure for high prices is high prices, and the cure for low prices is low prices. And if you look at, for example, like let's talk about uranium for a second. You know, Rick Rule, I love Rick Rule. Like Rick Rule is the epitome of what I think anyone in this space should kind of aim to be, right?
I love Rick.
For years, he's been saying when uranium was trading at $35, $40 spot price, he was saying there's only two options. You either switch off the lights or you increase the price of uranium. Cost about $65 to produce. The spot price was $40. No one's producing because you're running at a loss. So for years, he was talking the same theme over and over again. Then for what would seem like no reason at all, the sector change and the sentiment in uranium was incredible. You went from no one wanted to buy uranium stock to any uranium. If you just saw the word uranium in the announcement, on the title of announcement, you're doing 20, 30, 40, 50%. So if you're waiting for, okay, when this particular milestone happens, it's going to guarantee a sentiment change, that will never happen. Pretty much as long as you have a strategy which reduces your risk, so you can actually hold for longer periods of time, eventually you're going to be right. You can never be right on the timing. Your thesis can be right, but the timing, that's up to the market gods. But you should never try and time sentiment. There is, because if you could, you'd be a billionaire. It'd be so easy to get in and out. But you can't predict sentiment from a positive perspective or when the sentiment completely changes. Because guess what? Uranium stocks are down 50%, but the spot price is still over $100. Who could have said, I bet you that most of these stocks will start to come down when the spot price is, you know, double or triple where it was only a few months ago? Nobody. So if you try and predict too much, then I think that's where people start to feel like you're on a hamster wheel and you're not getting anywhere. You kind of just like throw your hands up, like you said, and they just don't care anymore. They don't want a bar of, you know, a junior mining explorer.
100%.
Yeah, but like the example we're talking about, the rare earth company I was in, you know, I identified the macro theme for rare earths, specifically ionic clay rare earths, in 2018. Yeah, you know, that really didn't take off properly until 2020, 2021. So you could be right about something that's going to happen. You can never predict when everyone else is going to catch up to your level of thinking, which means the volume comes in and the stocks go up. So you may have to sit around for a year or two. But if you're in a company that has a low cash burn, plenty of cash, management own a lot, so they're not going to burn cash for no reason, you can afford to hang around until sentiment changes.
Absolutely. So, you know, you mentioned that you love looking for the most hated stuff right now.
I love it.
What's the most hated stuff in your opinion right now? Other than obviously junior mining and, well, whatever. We can get into it again. What's the most hated stuff in your opinion right now?
Probably gold.
Yeah, right?
Everyone hates gold. You're either you're stacking gold because you believe it's going to go to 15,000 an ounce. You know, you got the physical gold at home, or you're like, I want Bitcoin or on crypto. Gold is terrible.
Bro, why hasn't the gold thesis changed in 50 years? It's like, got the gold just in case that the world's going to completely go to shit and go end. And
how about
all this
silver? It was like 30 years ago, silver was $50. Today's 25. So you could have been hoarding gold for decades and you've lost half your value.
Yeah.
So
I think that's what I'm talking about. It's like, it's just been the same friggin' thesis for 50 years and it just won't change. And it's like, no one cares, you know? But there has been times
like gold, like it was only 2017, 2018, where the gold sector was incredible. It was the best sector on the ASX, as in junior mining. So it was, our memories don't go that far back because we want nice memories. So we think we're trying to find the last good memory. And it was a while ago.
Well, we both have kid brain, okay? Yeah. Is it 2017, 2018? I was another human at that point.
I know, true. Very true. But like there's always something happening. I can't think of a time where there wasn't one, you know, other than that initial 2 month COVID crash where we all thought everyone was going to die, right? And everything just crashed. Other than that time, I actually can't even think of a time where there wasn't one sector where you could have made money on. So I'm trying to be positive. I'm an eternal optimist.
Yeah, you are. Listen, I'm optimistic too. It's just junior mining.
I can't wait to shove my gold profits down the throats of all those haters who said gold stocks will never do well.
They're your biggest cheerleaders. They'll be the ones who be like, dude, awesome, man. Thank you. Great.
They'll buy a few times higher.
Yeah, probably. Oh, that's hilarious, man. All right. So I think we've properly covered gold, junior mining, all that. I mean, is there anything else regarding that we should hit on? Any other commodities that has gotten up, not necessarily no love, but just no coverage whatsoever, that's really interesting right now? Is there anything we're missing?
I think my other favorite one is copper, but you know, it's got a lot of coverage. It's been around for a long time. I have no idea what's going to change the sentiment, but eventually it will. And like we've had some stocks, and the only case I'll mention is, you know, stocks that I don't own, but you know, AW1 that went from, you know, 5 cents to 40 very quickly on the back of one good copper hit. So the market, like, it wants to put its money in, but it's so hesitant. It's waiting for an amazing drill result to kind of, you know, re-rate a stock. Generally, that means, oh, this stock's done well. So other junior mining copper explorers will also start to do a bit better because people now have a bit of, some hope. There might be another, but we've just seen the ones that have done very well do really well and everything else to stay quiet. So it's just a balance game of you've got to stick around. Hopefully a bit of luck and, you know, you can do well.
Got it. So you mentioned, let's talk about the other 30% of your universe that you're looking at, biotech, tech, all the other stuff. What's been most interesting amongst the 30% other that makes up your portfolio?
Yeah. I love that. I won't mention the name. I've got a stock that is focusing on, MDMA and psilocybin. So the FDA took it up for approval last year and said, no, we're not going to reclassify MDMA and psilocybin to be used for treating people with, say, PTSD or depression. It came to the TGA, which is the Australian equivalent of that government body, and it was the world's first government body that approved the reclassification of those two drugs from illegal, pretty much, to if approved by a psychiatrist or a psychologist, it could be administered in a safe, controlled setting. So, to me, that sector can really transform because the results overseas in trials, even though it's been illegal to use, it's been legal to use in trials. The results coming from trials, and even in Australia since it's been reclassified, have just been amazing. I'll give an example of a first responder ambulance, someone who works for the ambulance services here. Very, very depressed on a scale of 1 to 5. She was a 5. This is coming from her. Suicidal thoughts, can't leave the house. And after doing two treatments with MDMA, is now trying to get back into the workforce, leaving her home just from 2 sessions. So I think that sector really excites me because it had a lot of celebrity publicity in the US before the FDA shut it down. So it can very, very quickly change. No one cares about the TGA again. We're just Australia. But if they've set a precedent now, then and the results of that precedent can be used to, lobby, say, the FDA, then this sector can really pick up because, right now all you're doing is masking the problem. You're depressed. Here's a pill. Take the drug. Mask the problem. Try and live your life. Where MDMA does the opposite. It's got a component in or an element in it that just allows you to feel comfortable to speak. So you don't feel fear. You don't feel fear about revisiting a traumatic moment. So you're not trying to mask the pain and just making the person feel good and give them a high. Yeah, that actually it's a non-hallucinogenic. That's the MDMA side. The psilocybin is different, but you can tackle pain management in such a different way. So I love that sector. It comes under the biotech, but I love that.
You're a speculator through and through, my friend.
That's it.
That's
Love it.
that you are a speculator through and through. Very
Why
cool,
did
man.
the FDA? Why did the FDA not approve it, do you think?
Well, I'll just go to cannabis because psilocybin and all that, like that is years away. Let's just call a spade. But like, let's say specifically for cannabis, there's a lot of speculation this year will probably maybe the year that it gets rescheduled and reclassified. Many think that it's kind of will be like something that Biden is kind of holding up until like closer to the election. But that
Right.
was the thesis that we had 4 years ago too, right? That was a thesis I think we had 8 years ago, that this was something that would be held on until, election time. And at the end of the day, there's so much lobbying from all the different tobacco companies and whatnot that are just not, they're not in any rush for this to get reclassified, rescheduled, and all that. And quite frankly, I mean, it's, you want to talk about rough markets in North America. Oof, man.
Cannabis is terrible.
Cannabis has been terrible. I mean, there are some interesting companies that, just know how to operate efficiently. But look, you're growing a weed at scale, right? That you're going to run into issues with quality control.
When you say psilocybin, not anytime soon, are you referring to like a large public scale? Because that's not what I'm talking about. So
Oh,
when you when
you're
you
talking
when
about
you
FDA.
recall.
You're talking about like FDA approval or FDA reclassification, right?
Yeah, but so there's
Rescheduling.
different levels of the of rescheduling.
Yeah.
So you go from illegal, right, to only to be able to use in trials, so medical trials done by professionals, then can be prescribed
Which
by a
is where we are,
professional.
but that's where we are now.
Now, right now you're
Right.
allowed to use the trials. It
Right.
can't be
That's what I'm
used.
saying.
Yeah, but Australia took it to the next level, which is the next level of classification,
Hmm.
which is a psychiatrist can say, you can come into my office. I will administer you MDMA, for example. You must stay here for 6 hours until the side effects wear off completely, and we try to treat you in that way. So you can't just go buy MDMA now and use it in Australia. It's only in that setting to treat someone in a controlled environment, which is what the FDA shut down. So you don't think it's, because there was a lot of, I know, you know, Mike Tyson, a lot of guys in the US were lobbying for it, but it was close, but didn't happen. Do you think not anytime soon?
There's just no, I just don't think that there's any incentive to move it fast. Listen, I'm also very much a pessimist on this, because having followed the cannabis sector, that was like my first gig on Wall Street, was analyzing small cannabis stocks back in 2009, 10. And the thesis then was the reschedule. That's now 13, 14 years ago now, you know, and it still hasn't happened. So like that thesis to me, I just am a little pessimistic about it, just because, like, again, cannabis, if cannabis happens, then anything is possible, in my opinion. Right. But once that happens, then until that happens, you kind of just got to put your hand in the air. I mean, look, there's a lot of these clinics out there that are doing great work, providing alternative solutions for PTSD, for pain management, for all sorts of trauma, which is amazing. Like that just personally, I'm happy to see that. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And,
yeah.
And that's great to see. So what else, I mean, what else goes on? I mean, we've covered quite a bit already, just junior mining, every kind of speculative. Is there any other speculative sectors that are piquing your interest right now that we haven't covered?
Obviously AI. I think AI is,
I don't think that's,
it's a buzzword. Yeah. It's a buzzword. Who, the thing, I think it's speculative because you're not really sure which direction it's going to go in.
Sure.
Okay, and who are the fakers, just, you know, putting in those couple of words to try and get the share price up.
Sure, sure.
Compared to the, you know, the people who've been, I'm looking for people who've been developing this for years, not, oh, NVIDIA did well, let's go and acquire, you know, some idea that has AI in it, because they're never going to get off the ground. So, you know, if you think back to the internet when it was first released, no one could have thought you and I are going to be having a Zoom on the other side of the world, very clearly. So I just don't know where it's going to go, in which direction. Obviously, as a sector, it's here to stay. It's not going to go anywhere.
Totally.
But it's just going to be hard to find, you know, what are some of the real stocks that can make a difference. Like through my company, Phoenix, I used to have a lot of people help me, just help like admin, stuff like that, where now I literally just go into ChatGPT, pop it in there, it just does it for me. So there's a lot of real world cases where people who used to get paid to do something won't get paid anymore, and they need to be reskilled. But it's not as easy as saying, oh, anyone with an AI ID is going to make millions of dollars.
100% agree. I just, and I'm right there with you. We're like, it has speculative qualities to it, but as opposed to like maybe some of the other sectors we've talked about, like with cannabis or with, you know, crypto, you know, like AI is definitely one of those sectors where it's just a matter of like, we know this is here to stay. We've already seen that there are commercial opportunities out there. And now it's just a matter of like, okay, well, what, especially as you go down the chain, what's really going to win? You know, what?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You know, like what tech, whatever, what software, all that good stuff. All right. I think we covered quite a bit, dude. I mean, like I said, final thoughts, anything you want to leave our audience with? Tell us a little, you know, why don't you tell us a little about Phoenix Global before you we part ways?
Yeah, sure. So Phoenix, I launched about a year ago, a bit over a year ago. So we represent ASX listed companies from an IR and PR perspective. Pretty much I want to revamp the IR industry, because the reason I started it was I found there was a couple of gaps, right? And I won't get into too much detail. I'm not trying to sell myself, but there was like gaps in how publicly listed companies engage with IR firms and PR firms. So I really want my brand to be, I only represent, you know, clients who I believe can be successful, not just anyone who wants to come along, and back that up with my own money. So I launched that about, it was like January of or December of 2022. And then I've got about 13 clients now, you know, some very good performance among them. You know, one of them was the fourth best performer on the ASX. Another one is up there in the top 10 so far in 2024. So, you know, for now it's been running really well. I use the same kind of strategy that I used to pick my stocks in the 50K challenge, which we spoke about. That's been running since 2019, when I launched a public portfolio of $50,000. And I was going to invest that in microcaps to prove that, you know, you don't have to be, it's not a game where you just get lucky. you know, from 2019 till today, we've seen COVID, we've seen inflation, we've seen interest rates, we've seen crashes, we've seen trillions of dollars printed. It's been a wild ride, but we've seen a lot more bad times than good times. And I think at last count, the challenge closed at about $550,000. So from 50,000 to, you know, 550 in 4 years in a very tough market, you know, I think I'm starting to prove my point that you can invest in microcaps, not just get lucky with, you know, you bought some shitcoin and it's gone up 50 bags in 3 weeks and, you know, all of a sudden you're a genius, but this can be done sustainably over the long term. So I took that strategy of selecting stocks in that challenge to identify clients who I believe fit that bill, who can, you know, I can represent from Phoenix's perspective. So it's been a great ride so far. To be honest, I don't know where it's going to go, how big it's going to get, because my main job is I invest my money. So I make my money by investing my own money. That's how I support my family. That's my focus. And I just, whenever I get some cool ideas, I like to do things on the side and build them up. And I don't know where they're going to go or how well they're going to go or how big they're going to get. But for now, I'm just really enjoying running that, running my own money. And when you're talking about final words, just don't give up hope. The markets always turn. It's crazy how, not to you, to the listeners.
Okay.
It's crazy how the market gods just know that you're like a week away from giving up. And then you throw in the towel and then somehow the markets do incredibly well.
Then
how
two,
it knows
but then for 2 weeks
millions
later,
of people. But millions of people somehow are always caught at they quit at the wrong time or they buy at the wrong time or they sell at the wrong time.
Yeah.
If you just stick it out, then I'm living proof. I'm not a genius. I haven't studied finance. You know, everything is, you know, I've learned from the internet, from Twitter, from YouTube, it's taken me a long time, but you don't need any special skill. You don't need a degree. Just keep going and eventually things will turn and, you know, that light bulb will just go off. I'm like, right, okay, if I'd just done that instead of all the other, you know, stupid decisions that I'd made in the past, would have made so much more money. But you've got to get over that hurdle first. So I guess that's my final words to leave people with.
5D, with that, where can our audience go and find more information on Phoenix Global, follow you on social media as well?
Yeah, so to be honest, everything is kind of funneled through my Gladiator HC account. So if you follow me there, then you'd be able to see what's happening in all aspects of what I'm doing.
Very cool. Fadi, thank you so much for joining me today. Really do appreciate it. Good luck. Stay safe. Good night. You know, have a
thank you.
Pleasant evening. And look forward to our next conversation.
Thanks, Bobby. Chat soon.
Thanks. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not an offer or solicitation of an offer to buy or sell securities. SNN Network, SNN Inc., and the Planet Microcap Podcast and the representatives are not licensed brokers, broker-dealers, market makers, investment bankers, investment advisors, analysts, or underwriters. We do not recommend any companies discussed. We may buy and sell securities in any company mentioned and may profit in the event those securities rise in value. We recommend you consult with a professional investment advisor, broker, or legal counsel before purchasing or selling any securities referenced in this podcast.